husbands and wives have a solemn responsibility to love and care for each other and for their children. Children are an heritage of the Lord. Parents have a sacred duty to rear their children in love and righteousness.
We welcome you to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Gospel Solutions is a program that promotes gospel living among everyday challenges and opportunities in marriage and family life. Today we will be discussing teaching children and youth to live virtuous and chaste lives. I'm Matthew O. Richardson, Second Counselor in the Sunday School General Presidency, and today I'm joined by three wonderful individuals who have a vested interest in this topic, especially when we're dealing with youth and with children. We have with us Cheryl A. Esplin, who is the Second Counselor in the General Primary Presidency. Cheryl, welcome.
Thank you, Matt. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you. I'm sure that you've thought a little bit about this topic.
Yes.
Both as a parent and in your calling.
I have. I've, you know, really tried to study and think about how I really do feel about this, and I feel strongly about it.
This is great. I'm excited to learn what you have to teach us about teaching children and youth about this wonderful, and I mean that quite seriously, wonderful principle of morality and chastity and virtue, as well as how to deal with the way the world is approaching this. We also have Adrian Ochoa, who's the Second Counselor in the Young Men's General Presidency. Welcome, Adrian.
Thank you. Very glad to be here with you.
It's good to have you here, and we're excited to hear specifically on some things that can help, particularly to the young men, in building their virtue in the world today.
Yes, and thank you for the opportunity. They are being so much challenged these days, so I'm very glad to be here and try to make a difference in their lives.
Oh, thank you, Adrian. And we also have Elaine S. Dalton, who is the president of the Young Women's Organization. Welcome, Elaine.
Thank you, Matt. It's so great to be here with all of you.
Yeah. Isn't it the truth? I mean, I look at the opportunities. I look around the table. I'm thinking, okay, who would be great to have talking about this? And I thought, well, first of all, we should have parents here. We have individuals who've been in the trenches, who have been dealing with this in their own family. Also, individuals who have been dealing with virtuous lives on their own, personal virtue, and I know that that's the case. And then also those who have been called and set apart with a sacred responsibility for a general membership, which means the entire membership of the world, of how to be able to help individuals to learn and to teach about virtue. So, whoa, this is all-star time for me, and I'm just excited. I think I'll just sit back and not say anything for the rest of the time and just listen to you share the gems that will help. So are we ready?
I think I read an article by you in The Last Ensign, so.
I was just thinking that myself, so we better open it up and just read it.
I don't know about that.
This is the October 2012.
Well, let's see what we can find out. Here's what I'm thinking. Let's start off on the very basic levels. As a matter of fact, I've learned this from the Apostle Paul. He talks about before ever building a structure, we need to lay a foundation. And ironically, often when we talk about the know ye not that you are a temple of God, we think of it in terms of chastity. That's at least the way that I've heard it growing up. And when you go back to the scriptures, when Paul is actually talking about this, he says, don't you know you as a person, your life can be a temple, an edifice of great, great importance. But in the chapters preceding that, he says, before you even start to build the temple, you must lay the foundation. For if the foundation is not worthy of the structure, it will crumble and fall. So with that in mind, when we're talking about something as important as virtue and chastity, and helping individuals learn how to live that experience, or especially to teach children and youth how to do that, let's lay the foundation of what virtue is. What do we mean by the term virtue? It's become more prevalent in the church's teachings. Not that this is a new concept by any means, but we hear it more often. So let's explore that virtue and chastity. Let's start with virtue. When we say the word virtue, what do you think of?
Well, I'm looking at Sister Dalton, and I guess everybody knows why. We were mentioning a wonderful book and everything, and I was just telling her before we started, when I remember that one time she told us that she was at the temple praying, And the word virtue came into her mind. So I will be very interested in learning from her again.
Elaine?
Well, you know, I think that the definition that we're talking about in the young women as we talk about virtue is a pattern of thought and behavior based on high moral standards, which encompasses and includes chastity and sexual purity. And the reason why I say that is because virtue comes from a Latin word virus, which means manly or power or strength.
Right.
And I think that's really fascinating because I don't think that there can be any power without purity. And so that in and of itself is very fascinating. You think about the powers that we access today, fiber optic cables that carry our ability to communicate. Those cables have to be crystal clear and pure for them to do that. And so I think that the very foundation of sexual purity is virtue. The very core is virtue, which gives us then power. It gives us power to act, and it gives us more freedom.
This is good because I like the implications this has, and the approach you're taking isn't so focused where you look up virtue equals sexual purity necessarily, but that's part of a greater whole. I think this is really an important concept. In today's world, there are individuals where they think that they can have power overall by foregoing certain aspects. Well, I'll make up for it in this aspect, so I can make up for it here, even though I'm lacking here. But really, virtue is an encompassing embodiment. As a matter of fact, in the Latin, when we look at that Latin, it wasn't long when you start to see the development of the cognates or the roots of this concept, where it starts to also rub into character. Is that it's a power, it's strength, and when we speak of virtue, at least in the early ways, it was talking about one's character, not just what one does, but one's character.
It's
who
true.
We are.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Not just what we do, but who we are. I like that, Cheryl. That's really good.
It's true, but you cannot have a character. I don't believe you can be thought of as a man of integrity or a woman of integrity unless you are morally pure and clean, because you're being dishonest at the very core of all of it. And so virtue in a very narrow sense could be defined the way it is in scriptures. There's in Doctrine and Covenants, verse 45, it says, "Let virtue garnish thy thoughts unceasingly." And when you go down to the footnote on that to further see what virtue means in that context, it says chastity. Now, what I think is so interesting is that when we talk to young women about virtue and chastity, the word chastity and virtue have been blurred or they don't even really exist in their vocabulary. So the word that they understand more clearly is sexual purity, which is what is in the For the Strength of Youth.
And by the way, any thoughts on the word chastity, the meaning of chastity? Sexual purity is the easy understood, and I think that's a great definition.
Well, it's very basic. It's basically sexual purity.
Yeah. It's to be clean, to be pure,
yes.
as far as that goes.
And like it says in Jacob, it's very pleasing to God.
And isn't it interesting? If we take something that is very pleasing to God, it seems that Satan knows that that's a prime target. Anything that pleases God in very real and extending ways, it seems that Satan will go after. And as a result, the way that he goes after it, he often counterfeits it, he smudges it, and he adjusts it. He takes something that is so pleasing, and I think in Jacob, he points this out, what is so pleasing is also causing some of the greatest sorrow within families. The fathers who are not being sexually pure or even virtuous is causing great heartache with wives and children. And poor Jacob, he's like, I hate to even bring this up. You can tell there's great pain. But isn't that the irony, is such pleasing element with virtue and chastity on one end to God. Satan distorts that because he knows it will bring completely the opposite of such heartache and pain and lasting generational experiences.
Yes, I agree to that. And I remember one time an experiment being done with children where they would put a candy in the top of a table and the children will come, but they were told, "Do not touch it before 5 minutes, and they will turn blue and red, and some of them would just come and grab it. And when I saw that experiment, later I learned that those that were strong enough not to do it, later in life they became very, very strong in their lives. And with sexual purity, it's very similar. So young men, young women, they are always tempted. It's all around them. It's very hard. But the blessings that come from our Heavenly Father, if they withstand and stay away from anything that is not virtuous, the blessings and the peace they feel in their heart will grow and grow eternally.
I like this a lot. As a matter of fact, I think that this comes with that foundational element of laying what virtue means. Because as we are obedient to principles of morality, whether that's honesty, whether that's the concept of our character in sexual purity, etc., there are blessings that come throughout one's lives, and it supports us and sustains us in ways that sometimes we don't even realize. And I'm sad that sometimes the way that Satan portrays this experience with sexual behavior, especially to the youth, that it doesn't have the longevity of implications of what this will do throughout your life. And sometimes I feel that our youth don't really realize the great blessings of strength that comes by being virtuous and morally clean in their lives. And it will support and sustain them in every aspect of their lives, not just when dealing with relationships or sexual behavior. Did that make sense?
It made a lot of sense.
Right.
And you know, the thing that's interesting, as parents and leaders of youth, we tend to go straight to the rule, do not touch it. But what we really need to do is help them understand why. Because when our children and our youth understand why, and as Adrian said, the blessings, then it's a whole different kind of behavior that comes, because they're noble spirits and they can understand.
And noble spirits deserve the nobility of the doctrine and the gospel.
And
of
doctrine
Jesus Christ
is always the why, is the answer to why.
That's right. And I really like this, because in some senses, what happens, especially at least in my observation in many instances when teaching about virtue and about chastity, is we often focus on the reason why we do this is because we don't want the bad effects to take place. I remember as a youth even, they often talked about the reason for virtue was because we didn't want unwanted pregnancies or diseases, etc., which, by the way, are very important topics. But very rarely was the discussion centered around the blessings that come of living a chaste life and the goodness that will take place. As a matter of fact, sometimes when we compare this to family living, we often talk about why divorce or failed families, you know, why it is so horrible in so many cases and the adverse effect. And we don't talk about the blessings of good marriage. And really, when it comes down to it, I think the motivation for the goodness of God is far more motivating than the possible outcomes of what happens when we break the commandments.
In fact, Jacob says that, you know, as he's coming to these people and talking to them about that he doesn't even want to talk to them about this subject. And he doesn't want to hurt the ears of those that are hearing. And he says to them, they have come to hear the pleasing word of God, just like you said. And then he has to spend the time, you know, trying to teach them what they're doing wrong and when they could be hearing so much more.
This is such a good example, Cheryl. I'm so glad that you brought this up, because it is a sensitive topic. It's an important topic. It's a difficult topic, because we live in a world where it's so muddled, so messed up in so many ways that the message is coming in different ways. So Jacob doesn't really want to talk about this, but yet he does. And this is one of the things I love about it. It may not be something that he would say, this is what I would like if I could choose any topic, but he does talk about it because it's a critical topic. So with that in mind, share with me some of your thoughts about this, because it's a topic that's being talked about and the world is talking about it incessantly. And so where is the responsibility? Who has the responsibility to bring that pleasing voice of God's view of virtue? Where does that responsibility come? Because youth and children are going to hear about this. They're going to hear about this no matter what. So the question is, where is the source? And what is the appropriate source?
You know, when you define virtue as a pattern of thought and behavior based on high moral standards, that pattern of thought and behavior begins in the home and in the heart. And I think that's the very root of where we start to teach and form patterns of thought. I think our thinking patterns are very powerful, how we think, we at one point act. And I think we start very young. Sister Esplin can probably is the expert on that, and very clear.
Okay.
They say the mind is like a computer, and really those ages of 2 to 3 are critical, is what some of the child experts say.
Now, I know that there are people that are listening right now, and they're saying, wait, did I just hear this correctly? So we should start teaching about chastity and sexual purity between the ages of 2 and 3. So did I hear that right, Cheryl?
Oh, we have to start young, and it's not starting with even the word chastity, but it's starting with the body being a temple of God and the sacredness of the body.
I like this.
A very young child can understand that.
See, one of the things that I love about this is teaching individuals, especially young people, to learn to live virtuous lives and chaste lives. It does start very young. Sometimes we look at this as, well, we're going to tell them about the facts of life. Actually, what we need to be doing in a gospel setting is teaching them the facts of eternal life. Mm-hmm. And that starts young, even in appreciating one's body. Little do we realize that we're actually teaching about the way appropriately we should use that body, an appreciation and a healthy view of a body, a healthy view of the way that the body is used at a very young age is actually teaching chastity and virtue in a wonderful, full way. I hope that makes sense.
It does. And I think even when the children are small, they come with questions. Where do babies come from? That's a very typical question.
That's
and
true.
We need to answer it. And we need to find the proper words that they can understand. But I think that the most important thing we need to have in our minds is that if we don't answer those questions to them and make them feel ashamed or embarrassed, asking those questions, later in life they're going to go somewhere else to learn about those things.
This is important, Adrian, and I agree with this. As a matter of fact, when we look at the young age in the center of home, I can't help but think of an experience I had with my first child, my oldest child, and I've never forgotten because I thought, holy cow, he was barely 5 years old, just turning 5. And I was in our home and he comes running in. He was playing outside. And he says, Dad, I have a question. I just have to ask you. And I'm like, okay, well, what's up, bud? And so he said, I just want to make sure I got this right. Boys. And then he went through questions about anatomy. And he wanted to make sure that he understood the anatomy. And girls, and he went through anatomy. And I said, actually, that's correct. He goes, thanks, Dad. I just wanted to make sure I had that right. Thanks, you're the best. And he ran outside. And I remember sitting at the table thinking, what in the world was that all about? And then I thought, I better hurry and get outside. What in the world's going on out there? You know, but the point being is here I am in my home, and here I have a very young child coming in with a question about anatomy. And here he's asking the difference between boys and girls, and he wanted to double check. Something's taking place where the source is going to be coming at him. I've always loved the fact that he had enough courage to come in and ask his dad and say, I just want to make sure whatever it is that I'm hearing here, I want to double check with you, Dad.
Well, he felt safe. That's what's so noble about that.
And so the point being, once again, is what is the source? What's the appropriate source for teaching virtue and chastity? And Elaine, as you were saying, it must start centered in the home, and we start this process very early in wondrous ways. So parents do have a responsibility, right? A sacred responsibility to teach this to their children.
Well, and they're going to learn it one way or another.
Right.
And so if a parent can teach it first with the perspective of the sacred and not the perversion that the world would teach it with.
This is good.
I think a little child, anyone really, all of us, understand to some degree, maybe more when we're younger, the feeling of our Heavenly Father loves us, and He loves us so much that He's trusted us to be parents, to have the powers that could create another life, that could bring another life into being. I remember when our oldest son was married and they had their first baby, and our youngest son was still in his teenage years. And how powerful it was after all the years of teaching in our home to have Chad standing at the window looking in the nursery at that newborn baby. And as we stood there together, I leaned over to Chad and said, "Now do you understand why it's so important to keep yourself pure and chaste and virtuous?" And he looked at that little baby in all of its purity, and he looked at me, and he had big tears in his eyes, this teenage boy, and he said, "Yeah, Mom, I get it. I get it now.
This is so good, because this wasn't a time of a lesson of do's and don'ts. It was teaching virtue in its purest form. And I think that this is a critical element as parents and even as leaders. Yes, we do teach the practical aspect of the standards of chastity and the way to develop virtue in the character sense, this broad sense of patterns of thought and living. But also this concept of it's so real. I like what it was connected to real life. It was a visual experience. And in many cases, this is one of the values of teaching in the home, is individuals don't just learn the values, but they learn to value. They don't just learn the standards, but they learn the importance and the feelings of standards. And when you were telling a story, I was thinking of an experience I had just yesterday where we were students. These are college-age students watching a Mormon message on expressing our affection. And it's really centered on Elder Scott's talk of what he feels with his wife. After we turned the lights up, this is 3 minutes, there were so many college-age students, out of 66 people, that were in tears. And so we started talking about this. What's going on here? Because he's talking about how he made those little hole punches for his wife and how much he loved his wife. And they were saying, "I could feel how much he loved his wife and how important this was to him." So it wasn't just the message of speaking respectfully of a spouse or loving a spouse. What they were feeling was the importance that message had from Elder Scott to them, and they gleaned that. So in many cases with parents, when we teach with passion, it's not just the content, but they glean that we feel important. Then the Spirit also testifies, this is important. I think that this is really wonderful stuff. This is DNC Section 68 of Parenting in Zion, is teach them content, but teach them also to live. We don't teach them about prayer. We teach them to pray and pray with them. So with that in mind, with parents, how can parents go about this? How can they teach their children? We said teach or start early. Any other thoughts on this? What can they be doing? Because this is a sacred responsibility.
Example, I think, is just, I mean, whenever you talk about anything, someone said, how do you teach a child? And they say, number one, example. Number two, example. Number three, example. But children can learn so much just by watching in our home, watching a mother and father and how they interact with each other and how they respect each other and how they reverence each other.
Oh, I like this a lot. I can't help but think Elder Hells often talked about influences in his life, and he talks about his parents were the prime examples of love and living the gospel Jesus Christ. And he even mentioned that sometimes the greatest lessons he learned was watching them when they didn't know he was watching, the way that they treated each other. And so I like what you're saying here as example. So living virtuous lives, keeping virtuous standards and standards of chastity, etc. Sometimes I think of for the strength of the youth, and we think that you graduate somehow, and when you leave young women's and go into Melchizedek priesthood, you just put that little pamphlet away, you're done with it. Now, thank you, that was really nice, but there's something about this is if parents would adhere to the standards outlined in For the Strength of the Youth, what a different experience that would be in home and in the lives of families, not just of youth.
I'd like to propose we change the title. We change it to For the Strength of You.
I'm with you on this one. All in favor? I think that this is so great.
It's for the family. It's not just for the youth. It's for the family.
As a matter of fact, here's a thought, is this is one good way, I think, of the many, where parents can use a practical approach to teach virtue and chastity, is used for the strength of the youth in their with their children. It doesn't matter. You being from the primary, let's start
children,
early.
We recommend it to families for children.
this is so good, is use this to establish the standards, the basic standards of living in your home. If you're wondering what should and shouldn't be done, review together as a couple and say, how can we do this in our home and embrace those standards? I can't tell you, but I'm preaching to the choir here. You've all had experiences in your calling and even in your family lives of where so many of the problems, when you're addressing problems, you go home and you're saying, oh, so this is where the problem is. Our parents are teaching contrary to the standards of the church. Why would we expect that there would be anything but difficulties going on?
You know, we need to teach children at any given age when they're ready to learn. We cannot just go to them and they're playing in the garden with a ball and just grab them and start teaching them about chastity. But there are very special occasions when they come and ask the questions. And there are also very special occasions like family home evenings.
Okay.
And we can find those wonderful topics when we want to teach them, and they'll be ready to listen and to hear if we are constantly teaching them in those occasions. And what a great opportunity is to bring, I have in my hand, precisely for the strength of youth, and page 35, two words, sexual purity. And we had with our teenage girl this lesson, and she loved it. She was asking questions. And it is a wonderful opportunity, and I just feel so grateful to our Heavenly Father that He has inspired our prophets and revelators to have these wonderful tools that we can use in our homes. And I also have here with me for the young man, our duty to God. And it also teaches them live worthy, scriptures, and how to stay pure and strong. So these are wonderful, wonderful tools that we have in our homes to teach our children.
This is so good. And as a matter of fact, I know for a fact of going through with my own daughters with personal progress, there's so much of an emphasis within this concept of virtue and strength. And I'll be quite honest, is fulfilling my duty to God with my son. I have a young man right now who is a priest, and going through that experience with him is very similar to, I've had sacred experiences with my daughters going through virtue. I mean, moving experiences. And also when you start to look at the experiences with the primary, these are tools that are not necessarily separate and say, oh, now's the time where we start doing this, but they're interwoven. They start very early, and the church provides tools to help us to the greater end, which is to become virtuous children, youth, young adults, adults, and et cetera, and so forth. What a wonderful thing.
And so, if we are virtuous, the very core, the very basic foundation of a virtuous person is a chaste, morally clean, sexually pure person.
That's right. I like what you're saying. At the very core.
Very core.
So when you start to look at what's taking place in the world today, sexual impurity, the immorality is in almost every aspect of the worldly living today. You can't help but see sexual innuendo when it comes to television programming, advertising, lyrics to music. You'll even find those in cartoons, which used to kind of be the safe bastion for children. Oh, it's a cartoon. I find this a lot of times where people are saying, oh, you can watch this because it's a program for children or for youth and it's safe. I'm not sure your experience. My experience is I always do, whatever my children or my family members watch, I will always, or even listen to a music, I will listen with them, you know, kind of a thing, and see what's going on. I have found that being able to go by the code of, oh, this is a traditionally safe channel for children and or for youth, that's not always the case. Sometimes it's not age appropriate. It's like, we shouldn't be having them thinking about these things at this time. Well, it's not that bad, but it's not appropriate in their development yet. Does that make sense?
Makes so much sense. And you know, the thing that I find so fascinating about this whole idea of moral pollution, we are so concerned about every other kind of pollution in the world. We are so upset if there's an oil spill in the ocean that affects the wildlife there. We're so concerned about our air and our water being pure. We want to be organic. We want to be a green. And those are such good feelings. Those are innate feelings in all of us. And yet we tolerate moral pollution. And that's such a contradiction mind.
Wow, this is a powerful example, Elaine. And as a matter of fact, I think that acute awareness of the pollution of the world is now we see this everywhere, and it's a simple phrase, and people are saying it all the time, go green, think green. Let's start to get back to the heritage of all the pollutants out. Go green. Maybe the time has come as we start to say go white, or kind of thing for purity. The time has come. Let's get back to the natural elements. Let's go back to pure as far as that goes, Or maybe
we legislate all these things.
Oh, my goodness.
And yet look where we are as a society and a nation.
Yeah, I think that's so
that
interesting.
That is really a good point, Elaine. I like how
we like
say
a pure
that.
Environment. As mothers, we want our homes to be clean. I mean, it's a part of our a part of who we are somehow.
And we really need to be careful, because sometimes we just guide ourselves by the regular ratings, like PG, PG-13. My wife and I have just had an experience. We went to see a movie because our favorite actor was playing on that movie, and the title and everything around what we read about it was great. As we were watching the movie, we couldn't believe what the movie was all about. We had to walk out of the movie. So we really need to be careful and monitor what our children are exposed to, because the world is really changing in a direction that we don't really want it to change, but it will change.
Adrian, this is a good point. And sometimes it's so subtle we don't even see the need to be able to stand up. And when you're speaking, I have to say this, and I'm sure all of you have experienced this, is there are youth out there that are so strong, and they are virtuous youth, and they stand as great examples. Case in point, I remember hearing some parents talking, and these are faithful Latter-day Saint parents, and they were watching a television program with their son, who is a teacher in the Aaronic priesthood. And there was a part that was a little bit off-colored, but it was just a brief part, and he got up and he walked out of the room, they noticed, and then he came back after a few minutes and sat back down. And they said that this program had some very humorous parts to it, and they would laugh. And then it started to get a little bit off color again, and this young man stood up and left again, and this time didn't come back. Well, after this was over, they said, and the mother started to get very emotional about this because it hit the core, and she said that our son came to us and said, "I'm embarrassed that I need to speak to you about this as my parents." And he said, "What we were watching was not appropriate, in my opinion, to what we're trying to do in our home and in the church, and what I learn about in my priesthood quorums and what's in for the strength of the youth. And I'm embarrassed that I even need to say anything." And the mother at this time was weeping because she felt so ashamed that she was the one that didn't stand up and walk out and provide the strength for the youth. But the youth was providing the strength for the adults. But it was really nice, and the way it all turned out is they all joined back in together and said, "We will do better, because we need to stand firm and stand tall." Sadly, we are out of time, but fortunately, we will be continuing our discussion on teaching children and youth to live virtuous and chaste lives. So I look forward to our conversations, and I also cherish the things that I've been learning from you today. So thank you very much. You have been listening to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.